Thank you.
Hey, yo.
Hey, yo.
How are you? Are you well?
Hey, hold on 1 second. Boop. Okay, there we go. Yeah, actually, this is the second day of no projects.
Oh, wild. Oh, I'm going to change my camera.
Yeah, no, it's been balls to the wall busy since like March. And I mean, I'm taking next week off. It's one of those things. Like, if I don't take next week off, I'm not gonna want to come back. You know, so it's, it was also yesterday, I just kind of felt like crap, and I think it was my body saying, it's time to shut down now.
Time to take a break, yo.
Yeah. So I mean, but meanwhile, I have gone to the gym, and it's like, but it's just that sense of like, I need to not have to solve problems all the time.
Totally. Yeah. There's something very taxing about that.
Right. Well, also, as I put it, it's like the role you play, if you're playing the same role all day, you know, when you're a hammer, everything's a nail. And so it's like, like even yesterday, or that feeling of like, okay, what do I have to do? What do I have to do? And it's like, you don't have to do anything. You sit and play video games. That's what you do. You watch a movie. You have a drink. You know, it's not about solving problems today. So the brain is finally like easing a little bit, but it's just that sense of like, this is not good, you know?
Yeah. In the words of snotty millennials everywhere, I love that for you.
Although, what was it? There's just, oh, you do you. And I'm like, yeah, but what if you're an asshole? <It's> like,
maybe you shouldn't.
Right. So, yeah. It's felt good. It's felt good to step away. I'm not going to feel guilty about it. But yeah, I also, all the breakout sessions for, not for Bahamas, but for Breakers were like, we got to start choosing them yesterday. And so I saved them as a PDF and sent them to Sean. And there's just like this sense of like,
I can imagine.
Yeah. Well, no, there's some things about it. One of which had to do with, you know, that sense of the trauma of this last year. And I'm like, well, that's good that you're, you know, not ignoring it, which everyone else is, because it's about like diversifying your income and growing your brand. And it's like, can we not? Maybe? Can we?
Right.
Oh, did you finish? What is that for? The luggage tags?
These are going to be luggage tags.
For what you showed on one of your Instagram stories, where the little box that you showed. Got it.
Yeah. So it's here somewhere. Yes, indeed. Things are falling. I realize I need to do crossed orientation on this so that any of the warping that occurs is counteracted.
Oh, you mean like the grain of the cardboard?
The cardboard, yeah. But they'll sit in there like that.
Oh, nice.
I'm going to, I'll have to shrink the size of the cardboard a little bit so it's a press fit. You know, the goal is that it'll sit in there and hold on its own, but we're making custom field notes for each guest and then doing this. Boy, where is everybody?
Well, I'm wondering, didn't Sean say at some point that we weren't going to have a meeting at one? Oh, here he is.
Well, maybe it's not this week.
Right. Now, have you ever used Wigglewood?
No.
You know what it is?
No.
Okay. It is, think of plywood, except compared to what you're talking about, where where the grain crosses, that all the grain is in the same direction. So it's plywood, but it allows you to curve it, like it's used for curved scenery.
Scenery, exactly. Ooh, however, that's fascinating.
However, I feel like there's got to be a use for it for you, where you want to do something that has the strength of wood, but the flexibility and not having to worry about like trying to warp it through wetness or something. So
I love that. I'm actually, I want to do signage with a tufting gun. That's the thing I'm obsessed with now. How you make rugs. It's how people make rugs. So it's a gun that you put on the backside of the rug and it just shoots tufting through it. And then you shave the top of it.
Oh, I was about to say, are you going to create a shag sign?
Well, so do you ever watch, have you ever watched Making It on NBC?
I don't think I have.
It's a crafting show with Nick Offerman and Amy Poehler. And it's like eight people. They do a small craft and a big craft every week. And my one of my friends, he's a big YouTuber and he is the like the handyman for the show. Like if they need help in the wood shop, he's the one that helps them. So we watched the show and they on the first episode of this season, they had to do a family portrait. And one lady did a family portrait as like a rug, but she framed it and didn't fill it out to the edges. And it was just gorgeous.
Right.
And I was like, this would make beautiful wedding signage. This would be spectacular. Right. In fact, doing a portrait the way they did it would be amazing.
Right. As long as it's not a doormat.
Walk on their face. Or, you know, to do a monogram with it or anything else.
Yeah.
But it winds up being like a fiber art thing. I'm trying to see if I can find a picture of what she did to show you because it was amazing.
Hi, Sean.
Hello. Okay. I'm loving hearing this.
Where is everybody?
Yeah, who knows? It's the week before July 4th. Yeah. There we go.
Why are you taking off? I can't. I'm just balls to the wall trying to get stuff done.
Yeah, no, I'm taking next week off, but yesterday and today were the first 2 days since like March where I haven't had projects. I mean, there's one where I'm waiting on something, but for the most part, it's like, I've done 6 months of work in like 4 months. And now it's like, let's just let the mind relax. And as I put it, stop being the hammer that sees everything as a nail.
Well, and hopefully you've worked really well and hopefully the wallet is full.
It actually is. And I haven't even invoiced for everything yet, but they're definitely like the larger projects have definitely been priced accordingly. But also like I did a shitload of work for Beth in this last month. And I think I've been really happy with pretty much all the projects this year so far. So I can't really complain other than feeling like in the past 2 days, I feel like I'm sighing less. Cause I think it's like every day I'd wake up and it's like, and now it's just like, okay, that I'm not sighing as deeply.
No, I mean, it's you're working and being, and look, I didn't have anything to write about. And then I listened to Preston's podcast today and I never should, man. Cause probably it always did.
I haven't really listened.
Make me want to throw a fucking brick at things. So
I will just to finish the conversation we were just having about the year. As of yesterday, I have billed as much as I collected all of last year, which was double my best year ever. So if I have a second half as good as my first half, I'm double that again. I did just this morning get rejected for the expansion of the EIDL, mm-hmm. which I was going to take basically, you know, if I sit on it for 2 years and then pay it all back, it's not costing that much. And the margins, the freedom that gives me in the margins, spectacular. Apparently I applied and I had it in my head that I was an S corp, mm-hmm. but as an S corp, you file your taxes differently. I'm an LLC that files a Schedule C mm-hmm. for my taxes. So she rejected the application and it freaked me out because I got a call last night that says, have you filed your taxes? I'm like, well, I filed an extension for 2020. She goes, no, 2018 and 2019. I'm like, yeah. She's like, the IRS doesn't have it because she was looking for like, I think it's like 2552 or something, whatever the form is that an S corp fills out, that wasn't there. And she's like, you didn't file your taxes. Totally freaked me out. But I did find out that I had put on my application, I was an S corp, not an LLC, and it screwed me up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just did that too. Hopefully they'll come back to me. I asked for that same expansion and I just said, screw it. I'm the same as you. I'm like, I'll take it. And I know technically you're not supposed to, I should put this on a recorded line. You're technically not supposed to use it to pay off debt. I'm totally doing that. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, like, what are you going to do? I'm going to pay you back. Right. Mm-hmm. Cause that way it's like, what do I do? Like your 3.7 30-year loan or like my 10%, you know, 7-year loan. Like, I don't want to be in debt, but if like, I have to be in debt, I want to, you know,
I've actually already started paying off my SBA loan, even though I don't have to, but it's like $300 a month. And I'm just like, let's just, get a start on it. It's not hurting me any in terms of, so.
Well, I freaking love that wine gourd. I think it's awesome. And I'm in the same boat. And, I think I struck a chord with people during this time. I think people are starting to, more than a few, or especially interior designers, are drinking the Kool-Aid. And so it's been a really good time. And I hope it keeps going. I'm the same as you. It's like, because I always rely on the turnover of clients, right? I mean, I think that's the nature of my business. I invest in business and stuff too, but I'm always about the turnover of clients. And so as 4 to 6 months happens, did I turn over well? And so far I'm doing okay where the turnover happens. And I've got this new crop coming in, which is great. And so I'm really enjoying. So I might expand my work. You know, usually it's 4 months to work with me, and I might expand it to 6 to say, hey.
Back in the day, it used to be just 3 sessions, right?
Oh, I still do that. I still have that, right? I still have that I still do that because, you know, I want to accommodate that person and have that be that way, right? I just know that that's never been, I actually started my business thinking that was going to be the principal source of my money, and it's actually nothing.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, that's that to me almost seems like the no man's land of almost like for pricing for what I do. There's, this group fulfills exactly what I need because I don't have the revenue to justify engaging you for 6 months.
Right.
But this covers that. It wouldn't make a lot of sense for me to invest in a mid-tier of 3 to 5 sessions. Because I can't justify the increase in cost between what we're doing and that. And then if I had the revenue potential based on what I want to do volume wise, going to the next step would make a ton of sense. And it seems to me like that middle would cannibalize that if you pushed it too much.
Well, yeah, a little bit. But Myra and I definitely work together and do that stuff, because when you have specific problems you want to solve, specific moves you want to make that are more in depth of this than this we could do here, but also not necessary to be working on for 4 months, that's where that comes in. And where you want to, for him, if I can say, it's tweak the contract, it's make these concepts, make these moves, do these different things, where it's more than we can do here, but it's less than what would be, then that's why that works. So
that makes sense. I, by the way, am here, but facing this way for a large part.
That's okay.
But so just a thought, as I was realizing it, maybe because I've been listening to a lot of podcasts about cults, maybe don't use the phrase "drink the Kool-Aid" because it's never a good metaphor because of what happens when you drink the Kool-Aid.
True. I guess I got to stop the Jim Jones reference, but I love the Jim Jones.
Yeah.
Reference.
Well, I mean, for people my age and older, yes. For really young people, it makes it sound like you're joining a party.
But no, I think there's still the Cosby reference there. I don't think it's any healthier.
Oh, no, it's definitely not.
Cosby reference.
I definitely should come up with another one.
It's Cosby, Cosby was the roofier.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. Cosby's the roofier, but the Jim Jones reference is that everybody died when they drank the Kool-Aid.
Right, so. Yes.
I probably should stop using that one. You're right.
Well, no, I
know Myra.
Or any kind of, there's always that fine line between a strong belief in something and a cult, but
Well, I mean, the line for me, which is the serious part of things, is I'm obsessed with what we do, mm-hmm. and obsessed with making sure that we, I'm not obsessed with being a cult and being a god and whatever that's about. So that's not the cult part. I'm actually not obsessed with being the cult leader. I'm obsessed with the movement of what we're trying to accomplish that takes obsession, right, in order to make it happen. And it's happening. I mean, I have to say, it's really pretty fascinating to watch it happen. And I didn't write anything this week just because, I like the dialogue and a couple of things I couldn't really talk about, because if I really wrote them, I wouldn't have any friends in the wedding business anymore.
Well, actually, here's since it's the three of us on here, because
everybody gets to watch it, by the way. So 30 people do watch it. So, just telling you.
Just remember, they are all here.
Right.
Right. No. But here's the question, because, and this comes from both what I was starting to mention to Wengerd, but also from what I sent you yesterday about the engaged breakout sessions, is in regards to being better or being able to you know, push these subjects out or to be applying more for these kind of speaking about these subjects that aren't brand fluff. And I mean, some of it is about vulnerability, but I just feel like, you know, seeing so much on the Engaged slate of everything that either just seems to be about sales funnel and diversifying income and such, that, but that it isn't talking about, you know, the creative side of business, or, you know, what are the what Wengert and I actually applied to for Bahamas, which we won't know of maybe for another few weeks. But I mean, I guess your thoughts are in terms, do you have any thoughts about, I don't know whether it's about applying for speaking elsewhere or just maybe what he and I can be kind of be pushing for, or?
Well, I think you should apply everywhere. Mm-hmm. I think that I wouldn't be hopeful. Here comes Brian. I wouldn't be hopeful that you're going to get to be speaking with Engage, because I think they're not. And what's so fascinating when I look about how do I diversify income and diversify what I'm going to do, is that what everybody is doing in that conversation is chase the fucking shiny penny. And there's no discipline. There's no perfect day conversation. And you may not agree with me about how to analyze whether to undertake a business that's separate from your core business. But if you don't agree with me, let's have that conversation about how you should analyze whether you should diversify your income, because to what end? To what end are you diversifying income, and why are you doing that? And that's the part when I read and why I couldn't write anything this week is like, I fucking hate it. There are stump speeches that are just about like basically putting lipstick on a pig when everybody's really busy. And so here comes another part about Preston, and that he said is like, clients don't understand how hard production is, so they don't have negotiating power and they should just understand. And to which I literally screamed in the car is like, no, you really don't fucking understand.
Yeah.
You understand what it is you're doing and how you're doing it. And he literally said, I want to do two jobs a month. Preston Bailey wants to do two jobs a month. Even if he works eight times a year, that's 16 jobs for Preston Bailey. 16 mm-hmm. jobs. That's insane. I would never hire Preston Bailey ever fucking again, right? Period. If he's going to promise me that I'm going to be one of 16 and that you can pull off these multi-million dollar extravaganzas twice a month. I mean, that's 8 months out of the year. He's saying I'm going to do it every, you know, whatever, 10
with,
months.
Completely with freelancers. You know, it's like,
yes, with freelancers, freelancers that I care about and that are going to be able to execute this stuff twice a month. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? How you've just absolutely bastardized what it is that you do and the opportunities that are in front of you. Like, right. No.
Right. But, yeah. Yeah.
So I am so apoplectic. And then when I read what you sent me, clearly I'm not supposed to be privy to that. Right. But when I read to that, it's like, what the ever loving fuck? And the idea that there's nobody, now maybe on the main stage someone's talking about technology, but what you, all of us know, LiDAR is going to change the industry. It's going to change the industry, mm-hmm. specifically. It's going to change interior design. It's going to change architecture. It is going to change the industry, right?
Yeah, so, well, and I even have an article up, what was it? Because I think it showed up on BizBash or such. One plan raises almost $4 million for event planning seat mapping tech, where it's essentially, you know, yes, it's for big stadiums and sports venues, but what's interesting is that they're using game engines to build these models. They're doing it so to be able to create interactive stuff.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether it's weddings or whatnot. It's like, this is easily going to be able to move over to this. You know, you have, I mean, it already exists to one degree or another with both Be Merry and All Seated, just different. It's I don't know, to me it's that sense of I mean, I saw certain little niche things there, like size inclusion in communication, partnering, like if you're a destination planner, the importance of partnering with someone local. I'm like, that makes sense, but
anything that's there is a fucking YouTube video. Anything that's what I'm talking about is a fucking straightforward YouTube video. It's not a conversation. It's not how do we solve big problems. Yeah. It's not how do we solve big problems. How do we know about things to solve big problems? How do we see this opportunity and what can we do together to manifest this opportunity? Whether that's to start a new blog, whether that's to create different ways to be perceived about what we do, how do we come together to create different ways of catering? You know, all the things that we have where this is what I'm doing. How do we take that further? How do we do these things both as businesses and as artists to take it further? And none of that energy is there. It's all the reason that I'm so upset is because everything there is a fucking YouTube video, right? Mm-hmm. And so now I have to sit in a room and hear a YouTube
video. Not even a TED Talk anymore.
No, I'm specific about that. It's a fucking YouTube video, right?
Well, so, how long ago were we in this space with Paris talking about what's coming down the road with photography?
Right.
And it's not here yet, but it's so much closer and no one is talking about it. Right, the fact that every $3,000 photographer in the business is going to disappear in 5 to 10 years because what Adobe is going to be able to do will kill them. Brian and I have had conversations about what every cheap DJ who doesn't know how to run a room and all they know how to do is play top 40, every single one of them will be killed by someone like All Seated or The Knot Wedding Wire partnering with Spotify with their API to build out deeply personal group playlists that will kill every $1,000 DJ in the market.
Yeah. Adobe just bought and implemented something called Substance, which had been its own separate thing.
Finally, they have some Substance. But sorry, bad dad joke.
Substance Designer and Substance Painter, blah, blah, blah. That whole Substance line is all about 3D modeling and mainly texture, like realistic texturing. And so that they're pushing more into 3D, that they're standardizing, but making it so that more people have access to it, you know, under the $50 a month umbrella of everything else that they have. I mean, just in terms of diversifying the tools. I mean, in Adobe's creative side has always been like, we want your creativity to be unlimited. We're going to give you the tools to decide how to do so. So and even if this timelines of when these things really become to the forefront, I think the thing that no one can really predict, because it depends on adoption. It depends on popularity. It depends on so many outside things. But to me, it's always like, this is inevitable.
And they think that it's far away because they don't see how quickly these things ramp.
Right.
Like it'll be completely under everybody's radar until it's not. And then it's literally the entire market. These lunch club conversations I've been having have been really fascinating. Mm-hmm. And I had two recently that were really powerful to me. One was a software development company that's building a contactless feedback situation. Mm-hmm. And what he's doing specifically is you ever been to IKEA or another big box store that has the red, green, and orange smiley and frowny faces, mm-hmm. and you tap, you know, what your experience was on the way out the door. And, you know, that's bullshit where some mid-level manager goes, hey, we're collecting data, but the data is not worth anything.
Right.
You know, an average satisfaction number is not worth a thing because it doesn't tell you why. So he's got one where they put NFC chips behind each one. You rub your phone next to it, just get your phone close to it, and it pulls up a web app that brings out a chat bot that can help. He said the thing that they're trying, the main selling point that they're trying to work with is particularly restaurants and other small businesses, that they can cut off bad reviews at the pass by giving the client and the customer an outlet to complain where they feel like they're getting resolution and get it in the moment instead of waiting till they get home and all of that. And then I just talked to a lady who sells interactive signage, and like her primary thing is like convention centers and campuses. But what happens when a rental company invests in, or a tech, an AV company in the industry invests in interactive signage that pairs with a phone and can tie them together? And Matthew, what it made me think of was yours and Valerie's presentation where you guys were talking about cascading entry into the venue, right? When we're talking deep in COVID, that kind of thing. What happens when because of NFC and GPS, they know by your phone who you are, and the signage can then start pointing people into different directions for different things, or interactive escort card displays that are literally digital displays, but because it's tied to your phone, it knows who you are, it knows your proximity to it. You can even have the fucking table light up when you get close to your table. The shit that's about to like be a thing that people aren't even thinking. We're going to be experiencing it in restaurants. We're going to be experiencing it everywhere else. Clients are going to start demanding it in events very soon.
Well, yeah, what was interesting, and this has been around for, God, I almost want to say 7-8 years, like when Disney World's like new Fantasyland opened and they had their restaurant, the Be Our Guest restaurant, is that you were handed a device and that had its own little GPS in it, so that it didn't even have a number or anything, but that your wait staff would know where you are and come to your table and give you your food without you ever having to really like identify yourself, because they knew where you were.
The Disney cruises and some other cruise lines show you pictures of yourself that their staff are capturing, because it's tied to your ID, and you'll go by walls and the wall will show you pictures of you, because it's tagged you and knows that you're in those pictures somewhere. And the interactive wall shows you things related. That shit is like, it's everywhere. Yeah. Why aren't we doing this?
Well, that's like what Michael Benville did. So you remember, do you hear that podcast with Michael Benville? And he's a former client. Yeah. He's crazy. Yeah. So it's obviously just for iHeartRadio. But so iHeartRadio, he did this 2-3 years ago. So a couple of years before COVID. And now he's implemented it all in Area 15. So he's the brain behind Area 15. He invented it. So everything you see at Area 15 in Vegas, soon to be London, and all over the world is Michael Benville, right? So he created it. What he did, which was so fantastic, is that at iHeartRadio, it's kind of freaky. So when you get off the elevator, there's like this long corridor. And when you get off the elevator, it scans kind of everybody's face. So it uses facial recognition software to scan and take a guess. The computer guesses about kind of how old you are. And so let's say it's me, right? So it would guess that I'm 50, in my 50s. It would say that I was a kid in the 80s. And so literally the radio station, you would see it as you came off, the radio station would tune like an old radio dial, and you would come off the elevator and it would tune. And for me, like if that was like, it looked like that was the average age, it would tune to the 80s. And as you walked into the offices, so like get off the elevator, you make a left and there's this corridor. And as you walk it into the elevator, from the elevator into the offices, which is a corridor, it would play 80s music. Right.
That's because amazing.
That's what it thought. It would, you would see it turn to the dial and it would be 80s music. And let's say somebody super young, it would play 90s music. You know, someone comes off and they look like they're, you know, whatever, you know, and young and probably like hip hop because how they're dressed, it would use that software and it would guess. Right. So it would guess, and it got better clearly because it's AI. Right. So it's guessing it kind of like if someone shows up and like, you know, a baseball cap turned sideways and there's a lot of jewelry going on, it would start to play hip hop. Right. And so, like, that's the technology that's 3 years old, right? It's sitting in, and that's what Area 15 does. As you walk through Area 15, it's guessing who you are to present to you these kind of this experience that's not static, right? So basing, like, if you're super young, it's not going to show you this kind of thing that wouldn't be referenced. But like, let's say you're my age, maybe it would start to show you permutations on like whatever, Godzilla, or those 50s, 60s, 70s monsters shows that are there, that would be Area 15. So like it's interactive in that way, right? So like, and that's the kind of stuff like, all right, what do we do with it? And the conversations we're having right now is like, what could be the problem solved? How could we make events better? What is it gonna do that would be really fun to explore and use? And how could we use it and become part of it? How could we own it? Maybe we wanna be part of the technology. Maybe that's something Brian wants to actually own, right? And so, okay, great. And that ability to have great and powerful conversations as part of the program and part of the thing that's supposed to start dialogue is what's missing from Engage, and what makes me so fucking mad, right? And makes me furious when I hear a Preston Bailey podcast that's like, I've never been busier in my 40 years of business, and now I have all the power, so therefore, and production's really hard, so therefore I have to charge what I need to charge. And oh, by the way, I only want to work so much, so I'm not going to basically rip some client off. I'm just going to charge what I need to work, what I want to work, which is 24 times a year. Like, are you fucking kidding me? And that is a paragon. And granted, he's not the only paragon, but I have to say, look, whoever's running Colin's business has got it right, because Colin's doing a lot of interior design. He's doing a lot of kind of structuring. He's doing a lot of overall kind of visionary stuff. And whoever's running his business is, because it's never Colin, is doing a really smart thing, right? By positioning him to being an ultimate kind of visionary tastemaker of what the ultra luxe sect wants and how to experience these environments. And so, you know, whatever it is, it's not competition. There's room for everybody. But I just get to be so, so mad, right? And, you know, it also, you know, it gets to this kind of point of what are we going to do as an industry and how are we going to do it? And that's, no, that's the Brian speech that he gave. And like moving the needle doesn't mean moving the ultra lux set. It means getting everybody to perceive what it is we're doing and why, right? And how to kind of make that statement go. And that's always the challenge for me in living in this world that is there. And of course, you know, I want engaged. I love, you know, I will never not love Rebecca and Catherine, right? I wouldn't have a big part of my career without them, but like they've so lost the thread at this point that it's very, very frustrating. And, you know, I don't begrudge anybody for making money and doing that stuff. And clearly, you know, the Beth Helmstedters of the world are super busy. Everyone is super busy and I love it, right? That they're working. But the question is what do you do to change the game? And like you'll hear my podcast next week. It's like, it's a Dick Fosbury story again. We are here. We are literally here. The ground has literally changed underneath your feet, right? It's literally the opportunity to do something different and be different is right here, right? Right here, right now. And, you know, like the proof is in the pudding. It's like, because let me just say the quality of your work, Weingard, of course has gone up because the bigger budgets are there, but you're not a better artist than you were 3 years ago. You were the same fucking artist, right? You just got the chance to do what you do, right? And here it is. Yep. You're like literally doubling from a double, right? Exponential growth from, you know, 219 to 221. That's insane, right? So,
yeah.
And now you have it and now you'll never look back, right? And the idea is it is how do you keep pushing the edge and to keep going that way? And, you know, the remarkable part of things is like, well, wait a second, because I am also 1,000% confident that, you know, you'll work however you want to work, right? You'll do the work you want to do. You, Myram, are making the kind of money you want to make. And you have the wherewithal to say, I'm not going to work for the next month. I'm done. I'm going to take time. I'll take some time off. I'll go to Engage. I'll have myself a good time. I'll stop by Disney, have a great time. And I'm not going to sweat the fact that, you know, I'm, as you say, not, you know, always trying to drive in the nail. Because I know that the work will be there for when it's meant to be, right? And for those that know that I'm not around, then they'll know that what I'm bringing to the party isn't just somebody who can draw for them, right? It's somebody who does so much more and sees the world so much bigger than they do. So, I mean, it's amazing to me because I still, you know, every once in a while I talk about and sometimes, you know, surreptitiously share shit you did in 2005, right? From back then. And like, I can tell you that's still light years ahead. Still, yeah. What you did literally 16 years ago, no joke, is still light fucking years ahead of what so many designers do today, which is insane to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I can promise you that package that, you know, I send it out surreptitiously, I've made it unknown, but but you know what I'm sending out is Bakri, right?
The which one? Oh, the Bali?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that was 2008, not
2008. Fine, it was 13 years.
No, I'm just letting you know.
So whatever it was, I'm too fucking old to begin with, right? But my point is that it's 13. By the way, the iPhone just so we have a perspective, iPhone 1 just came out in 2008.
Yeah.
So just so we have a perspective on what those 13 years look like, right?
Yeah.
I don't think Instagram clearly didn't exist. Facebook was in its infancy, right? So we were light years away from the environment we live in today, and forget about what happened during COVID, right? And that's still, that package is still, you know, I've yet to see somebody come up in terms of the comprehensiveness of what gets done at a level. I have rarely ever seen something rise to that level. Ever, right?
Well, what's interesting is that I think with Mark Elliott, there was a thing we did out in Long Island.
This, right.
Like one of the first projects he and I did, because David and Donna and David were right. Part of it. And we essentially did create like everything from the drafting package to, you know, renderings and whatnot, all, you know, all together. And I think I've actually done that twice with Donna and David.
Right.
For different projects. And it's, yeah, the idea that that's not part of, I mean, yes, there are some things where it could be an expensive wedding, but you're not doing enough custom fabrication where you need a drafting package other than
right.
Ground plans. But other times these tented weddings that are just completely insane. And I'm wondering what are these conversations that these vendors are having that they're figuring this out and how much time and money is it wasting?
Yeah. And it's really fundamental. And the reason it doesn't happen is a business reason. There's a fundamental reason why it does not happen. And it has not happened in 13 years. Nobody charges a design fee. You don't get paid. You don't get paid to do it. Right?
I would say it's even more abstract than that. No one's investing in design. And yes, right. The two are interlinked. But to me, it's that idea of okay, like back when I was doing theater, that I got into projection design, and that was a relatively new thing right. in comparison to everything else. But that in regards to using projection and video, everyone was focused on production, not on design. It was like, look at this flashy toy. And in the same way that we see projection mapping being touted, but not what's the story that the projection mapping is telling. So it's to me, it's like, it's constantly been this backward thing. But to me, it's like knowing the difference in the clients that I really want are the ones who I can see are focusing on design, even if their business model isn't necessarily great, at least it starts from that, from right. that foundation. Right. So,
which is amazing to me. And that's the part that gets so frustrating when I see the stuff that's happening at Engage and where it's going to be, is because in those interim 13 years, the tools of design, the tools, whether it's a gaming engine, whether it's what Adobe's doing, whether it is whatever is happening, the tools for design, the tools to present and distribute design, no matter what it is, right? Whether it's music or it's photography or it's visual design or it's paper, the tools to present design have exploded, absolutely positively exploded. And the idea that these tools, it's like saying, well, I can understand if I could only kind of show you something because all I had was a pencil and a paper, right? And you know, now I have like a, you know, the cloud computing, which is like more computing power than like, you know, 500,000 times the computing power, a million times the computing power that sent you know, astronauts to the moon at my fingertips for basically nothing, right? Yeah. And I'm deciding, fuck it, I don't need that, right? Literally, that's what's happening. Fuck it, I don't need that, right? And because I think like I'm doing just fine and clients don't have this stuff, and like, that's where I go crazy, because here it is, your opportunity to change the game. You have literally limitless tools at your disposal to communicate. And it's like, literally, you're choosing to communicate with fucking smoke signals, right?
Right.
It's like, you can text, but you choose to communicate with smoke signals. What the fuck, right? Right. And then here we are in an idea where the culture has shifted because people are accustomed to seeing things digitally now, to talking this way, to do things yeah. on Zoom, to do things visually, right? Look at what we've done. We had, I don't know, remember the last time we had a phone conversation, because nobody used Zoom before the pandemic, right? Now right. we couldn't imagine not doing it. I've had to become comfortable with it.
Right. So, although it's funny, because to me, then it gets into the side of mediums where no one likes a Zoom meeting with 30 people on it, because the nature doesn't scale up necessarily well unless you're doing a very curated webinar, because then it's just this sea of voices.
Right.
While at the same point, it's like, I can also make a creative distinction of there are points where people like, say, Mary Fan, who does sketches, or anyone else who does hand-drawn stuff, has there's a particular quality and a particular nature to that medium that are going to be good for certain things.
Right.
What I do is good for certain things. And so it's always about what medium is going to do it the best. So it's not necessarily always about digital, but yet at the same point, there's so much about throughout the whole process that the technology is only going to become easier for people to become either more efficient or to be communicating better information through that. And but what I'm wondering is there this ethos of, this is weddings, this is precious, this is, and whether it's just this abstract thing in the head of like, this is something handmade, so why would I use computers? And I don't know whether
it's just
inertia.
It's just inertia, because for me, it's like Cligram and Barclay, which is a great article I've shared before here, where like, hey, they use this beautiful interplay of kind of analog stuff, drawing in 3D and digital, not digital models, but really, you know, created models, even mm-hmm. though they might 3D them, print them, right? But they're really using this interplay of physical interaction and materials and drawings and things like that. And then they're also using the highest end tech possible that's going to map out light and use the reference of gaming of how the house is going to be seen, where it's seen.
The tactileness of the materials in your hands.
Right, but then they move immediately to the digital experience, because that's the best way to communicate.
Right. Which is why it's funny, because sometimes when you talk about doing like a prototype of a table, that I'm like, there's things about that which are irreplaceable in regards to the immediate close-up experience of smelling the flowers, of touching the plates. But once you get beyond that 8-foot radius, you're outside of what you can actually communicate. And so the idea of doing these things
is. And so like, that's like, you know, to bring Brian in the conversation, that's like Brian playing a song list, right? And saying, here, just listen to my song list. Meanwhile, he may have different ways of presenting with, you know, sound and light and kind of volume and speakers and everything else that he's doing that's going to be an experiential kind of thing that he's totally down for. Right. So it's one thing to say, hey, do you love the fluency of the song list? But like, that's just like one piece of 20, right, that he's going to bring to it. And some of that he can share right before they experience it in an immersive way, right? Right. Question is like not investing in doing that if it's possible to invest is that's just silly,
right?
And I'm like, what the fuck, at Engage, right? Don't do it because you don't have to. Course you don't fucking have to. You could also be broken next month, right?
So well, here's also then a creative question for Brian, and this is by no means any pitch whatsoever, is that in regards to the shows that you usually create, is it more than just music, or are you getting to have creative input or even production of like, I don't know, LED screens behind you or lighting that is part of that show?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it's like multidimensional, not just the sound, but the aesthetic, you know, what the booth looks like.
You said that many, many times. So I was
the
like,
lighting looks like, DJ furniture is a new thing too. Like I've been really, the way that it's presented, the actual gear with the kind of fitting, the feeling like it feels like it's a part of the space rather than some like 6-foot banquet style table that you'd set your gear on. You know what I mean?
Got it.
Yeah.
So no, I think that's
what I'm trying to say. Beautifully designed DJ booths are one of my favorite things right now that feel like they're integrated into the entire set, essentially.
Right.
Because no one needs to see your cables in your turntable. Well, maybe
100%. Yeah, I mean sometimes, yeah, it just needs to look like it be presented well, and no one was ever focused on that before, and now you're seeing it everywhere.
Unless it's fun, like you're going to show like a, you know, an airplane cockpit, right? And so I remember if it's entertaining to do that, because I remember some pre 9/11, you used to be able to like watch the, you know, they had a feed where you could watch the airplane take off and that kind of stuff, and the captains do their what they're doing, and it was freaking cool, right? So if it's part of the experience, then you will use it. But like what you're saying is exactly that. It's like, I just want to create the visual experience to go with the auditory experience, which go to the feeling experience, right? And, you know, especially if you're gonna like release whatever smoke or something like that, and as you do stuff, because that happens, and it's like you're trying to get a 360 experience going, and how the heck are they supposed to know it and for them to pay for it if you're not going to have a mechanism to be able to get them to understand it, right? Yeah. And so
100%.
It's like, it's amazing to me, and we're not having, and what that is such a bigger conversation, because in order to do that there has to be investment and there has to be a payment for it, and you have to say, okay, what does the business model look like and why are you doing that? And so to bring Disney into the conversation, look at what Disney's doing. They're spending like, you know, fortune of money on R&D today, right? Because they're definitely going to be more of a production house than they're investing in the theme park. So they're spending a fortune of money on kind of great kind of filmmaking / experiential things that are happening. And they're pushing things way further and faster than ever thought, right?
Well, just all the stuff, well, I'll call it the larger Disney, especially the live action stuff, all the Mandalorian. But now I want to say Jon Favreau, what he did in regards to realizing of using these volumes and these virtual backdrops and how it can change movie production.
Yeah.
Where all of this stuff is now actually happening in camera. And what it does is, yes, you're doing a lot more planning at the very beginning, and you're just like, wow, this is a lot of work. It's not saving any money. But at the same point, oh, we have this environment, but we actually want to rotate it 90 degrees, or can we flip it? Can we mirror image it? But you have the actors in the same places. That would be impossible in real life. But even with special effects, it's like, but with this, the idea that all this stuff is happening in camera, I'm kind of doing some of the same stuff, even with the Vectorworks work I'm doing, that I used to do all the stuff in Photoshop. Now I'm spending 5-10% of my time in Photoshop. putting stuff together because I'm kind of doing everything in model.
Yeah.
And even how that has changed the creative process and even the speed of stuff is, it's just, I don't know, to me, there's no end point.
No, there really isn't. And the adoption process to that is amazing and phenomenal. And like, I don't know where it ends. And so like, what does it do and how does it kind of manifest differently and kind of where does it go? And, you know, just the sheer aspirational quality of what we're talking about is accessible and available to everybody as those tools become more ubiquitous, right? So yeah. I may not be able to afford whatever, you know, this proscenium that costs a gajillion dollars or Weingart's, you know, laser cut paper, but I can certainly ask for more specificity if I can afford something other. And the halo of that is that someone can create it, right? And someone can start to keep moving and create. And I just think that those are the things that I keep coming back to and keep coming back to. And as the demand is there, the one thing that is clear from hearing Preston and knowing, you know, how busy everybody is that of course the demand is there. It's an emotionality thing. And the idea is like, how do I take this emotionality and keep it and use it and run with it? So my point specifically back to you, Weingart, is that while you doubled this year, which is fantastic, and double from last year is fantastic, next year is going to be a quadruple. And that's how it's supposed to go, right? Because you've earned that next permission to say, okay, great, here's where this is. And so how do you do that? So maybe you have a $7,500 design fee today. Next year, it's 15,000. Brian's average rate is going to go from 8,500 to 20 grand. I have no doubt. I have absolutely positively no doubt. And what he might say, well, you're like, Sean, how do I do that? Well, I have to do at least two gigs and each gig is going to be 12,500, right? 15,000. I have to do at least two gigs at the at the event, right? And they each count as something separate, right? And because I'm going to be experiential in that way, right? So is everybody going to do that? No, right? But that does that offer different and unique opportunities, right? For whatever is going to be. And understanding, to me, it's about this move to make the wedding business once and for all different than what it came up to be, simply because the culture has shifted and we're not paying attention to it, right? We're not paying attention to that. People don't want weddings as status anymore. They don't want weddings. And that's, by the way, is why Maru is such a dumbass fucking thing, right? And awful, beyond awful.
Because every time I think about it, it pisses me off more.
I can't, it's unbelievable. And you know, look, I mean, are the advisors going to change? No. You know, are they going to be, you know, what are they going to do and all the rest of that? Nothing's going to hurt them. They're just going to move on. But, you know, yeah, and maybe they'll be successful. Maybe they'll win. We certainly won't know for a long time, but I just, you know, that is like endemic of a culture that once was, as opposed to allowing somebody to have a sense of self-expression that allows something to celebrate the beauty of life, right? In this moment. Meaningful. Meaning. The wedding business can create meaning. Finally, it can create meaning because the access to expression is possible. It wasn't 20 years ago, the access to expression was not possible. You couldn't have custom DJ furniture because it would be priced out, right? You wouldn't be able to do that. You wouldn't be able to manifest something like that. You know, the tech wasn't there for being able to create the song list and playlist that you have and the ability to access all this different material because it just wasn't available, right? So, and it certainly wasn't certain in the way that it is. So here comes this huge ever-growing ability to have self-expression and to create more meaning for what this event is. And by the same token, get people to invest because they want to. And as a business, we're saying, yeah, but we still do it like we did 20 years ago. Like you still pay us the same way, right? This is how it works because we just sell products, don't you know? And our job is to get you to spend more money and look at Wedding Wire at the average numbers. And here you can finance it now. And it's just this ugly, nasty underbelly of a business that has no basis in what the future could be. And it pisses me off, right? It really, really pisses me off because it's this cultural shift that can happen if we allow it to, right? If we allow it to be played out. And that is what is so heartbreaking about a conference like Engage, right? Because they are now all fucking in for COVID's over. We're back to doing what we were. They are fucking all in, right? And I will give
this though, is that Marcy, how they're planning breakers, the, I guess the logistics and infrastructure is definitely like Marcy's heading it up in regards to safe logistics. They, one of the things that they revealed yesterday, and I've used this already on a WIPA event with something called Bow Digital, where all of your vaccination or your tests, like if you're vaccinated, you have to verify, you know, all that information and it gets stored. If you haven't, it, it helps you to set up like one of those more rapid tests within 3 days of going there. They will, it says that basically attendees either have to be vaccinated or they have to test negative like 3 days before. So just even like the fact that they're using that, and but I also know that they're splitting, they're going to do, I think, a good number of things outside, and also the gala is being split up into two or three rooms. So I'm, I will say this, it's like, I, if they had had someone probably other than Marcy, who of course had the experience of going through a lot of those protocols, I'm kind of like, at least this is in the right direction in regards to attendee safety. But beyond that, I can't speak for it.
Yeah, I mean, fine. They're doing it. You know, they're being COVID safe. I think that's great. I mean, obviously,
yeah. Well, no, but to, I hope that they actually have Marcy have to talk about that. I think so that it isn't just a word. So I just want to give.
I'm more of the upsetting part for me is like just the sheer energy of dialogue of inspiration and what. The obligation, because I see it as an obligation. I see like what you did, Brian, by getting in and talking. I see it, the two of you, we started this by saying you and Weingart are going to go out and create this speaking series. And that the obligation is to say that the business is not the same. All of you are walking around thinking that the business is the same. And you can delude yourself into thinking the business is the same. It's just, by the way, so we can take it out of weddings. I don't believe the restaurant business is the same at all. I don't believe it for a second. I think that we're coming very close to the stage where, you know, those restaurants are going to become experiences. And whereas you used to be able to get away with $50, $60 luxury price heads, you know, per person price heads, it's going to be an experience, $200, $300 per person, right? Because otherwise, how do they stay in business? How do they do what they do? And the average check is going to have to raise up to make the restaurant experience and event experience, no matter what you do. Because otherwise, how do those restaurants stay in business? To do what they do. The model sucks, right? And so it has to get broken.
All the stuff that's happening in my neighborhood, all the places that are that have opened since are very themed is not the right word, but they are very much modeled around like the cuisine and the experience of that. There's like a French Mediterranean place that tries to be as outside as possible. There's this place called Whisk and Whiskey where that's both like Cambodian and I wish I could remember the other Dominican, and they're doing like these bakes, but they're also, it's like both a cafe and a bar, and but it's like it has a distinct personality, it has a distinct ethos, like they've got cakes, they've got cookies, and it's all amazingly good, but all the places that are just like we got pizza, it's like well yes, you're gonna have some of those places that have no seating and it's completely volume, but the places that are, have close and the places that are replacing them are very much more like Rachel and I have been like, oh, this looks interesting. There are places that are only open for dinner. And it's the, I think I saw some place that we're going to go where it's just all about the Italian dinner. And it's like, they're only open for dinner. And I'm like, good.
Good.
They're not trying to, you know, sell pasta kits on the side.
Yeah. And that's what they do. And I think that that's what's going to happen. You know, because the restaurant model sucks, right? Because you cannot make money selling food. You can't. The model won't let you, right? Because the margins are too terrible, and the risk of food, because of its nature of being perishable, makes it impossible. Like, there's no restaurant on the planet that makes any money selling food. They make it all selling booze, right? Because booze isn't perishable, right?
There's actually a place in the neighborhood called Pasta Louise where you can go there and have dinner, but they also have kits. Like literally you go in, spend maybe $50, you decide on your sauce, your pasta and such. And then depending on what you're getting, it comes with a bottle of wine that's been curated for like that combination.
Right.
And it's like, and the DIY part is so extremely minimal, but at the same point, like during this last year, we did it like twice and we're like, oh, this is great. Let's also get the Bananas Foster ice cream. And it made no apologies for what it was. and it made it just as enjoyable because some thought was put into it.
Yeah. That means that the restaurant, what we're saying is that the restaurant experience is upending itself.
Yeah.
And that restaurant, so think about how that plays out with events. I'm not doing it lightly. So if the restaurant experience plays out in a much more engaging and interesting way to the experience that you have by going to a restaurant, what do you think the expectation is going to be when you hire a caterer for your event, right? That expectation is going to go to the moon.
Shaping right? Dish.
Yeah. Good luck. Good luck. Just like fucking serving the way you used to. Good luck being, you know, a Sterno and chafing dish player, right? Maybe you'll get away with it. Probably won't, because the expectation is like, why would I do that? I'd rather hire this restaurant to do what they do, right? Because that's, no, and I appreciate it's not the same business, but when the catering business pales in comparison to the restaurant business, then why would I want to spend all this money to get less of a product, right? Less of an experience, less of a way of doing. So the pressure of creativity, of presentation, of drama and experience from the caterer has to be paid for. Well, you ain't going to pay for that if you're trying to mark up food and booze, right? It's not going to happen. The per person price for marking up food and booze relative to the way the catering model used to work, not going to work. It's not going to work when you have this huge pressure in the restaurant industry to create different and more remarkable experiences that people are going to pay for because they have to, right? In order for the business to survive, that they have to. That's going to have a huge halo on catering. And so, like, who's the caterer up there saying what you think about catering today isn't, right?
Right.
It's not going to stay out. It's not going to stay the same. And you know who knows that the best is Marcy. And you know who's at the forefront of that, who she's using over and over again, is a guy named Michael. The business is Michael Scott Events. Michael Weiser, who's out of his fucking tree, by the way. But he's crazy fucking good because he's all about the experience.
I love his food. He's some of the best potato chips I've ever had.
Yeah, because he's over the top of the experience. He's over the top with the visual experience that you have, and everything is this lushness of presentation. He's riffing off of what they do in Peru with the dessert tables. He's riffing off of all
everything's a freaking cornucopia of food. It's the idea of food as this visceral experience.
Right. And so he's doing that. And he gets a number that's insane relative to traditional caterers, and he's killing it. Yeah. And the reason is that he's killing us because he's taken what the catering experience is and he's elevated it, and COVID's done nothing but better for him. And the reason he's going to keep on winning and winning and winning is because the clients are experiencing when they go out to dinner from now on, not the traditional eat meal on a plate, go home, right? But the experience, as you're talking about, with how different crafts and different payments and different ways are going on are happening. And that has a direct impact on events. And yet nobody's talking about it. Nobody's talking about the catering model, which is a per person price model, and then a labor model. Sucks. It's over, right? It's absolutely fucking over, right? Because there's no way for you to make money. There's absolutely positively no way for you to make money relative to what the demand is for, right? You have to have some sort of creative / production experience outside of the food that's getting delivered and served to you, right? And that most caterers don't understand. You know, they don't understand what, so for instance, you know, they're trying to make it up in rentals, they're trying to make it up in, you know, whatever they're trying to glom onto, which is somebody else's, right? But the reality is that it has to be this production fee-based thing, which is we have this visual experience of how this is going to go, an orchestrator, if you will, right? Somebody who's creating the overall experience, the director, the producer, a production fee, if you will, the producer fee, is going to be incorporated, not a creative, right?
Right.
Not a creative in the sense of like what it's going to be, which is obviously going to be part of it too, but the production itself, right? What Donna would actually get paid for, part of what she would get paid for way back when was producing the theater of the food, right? That's going to be a fee. That's going to be in the part. And how do we get the industry to accept it and adopt it at every single level? Because it's going to become the dispositive thing. But yet, you know, people are not talking about that. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And so like to not have like, oh my God, coming out of Engage, my head is just spinning with all the different things that I have to think about, right? Yeah. Is that's the crying shame of it all, right?
Although I'm suddenly realizing it's like breakers, at least during Engage, have often created food as an experience.
Yeah.
Like I remember 2012, like even just the lobster claws, everything was on a custom made block of I mean, the dessert was this insane sort of thing. And so I am looking forward to that.
But my point is, like, that was then, this is now.
Right. So, it's not the same.
How do you take it five steps further and say, this should be the expectation? How should you talk about why you need to change your business? Because if you can't figure out a way to do this, you're going to be broke, right? Mm-hmm. That's what's there. That's what, you know, look, I thought Breakers is remarkable at what it did. And I love the talent that was there. And for, they pulled it off and did great stuff. But I think that the business itself has evolved so far past that now, right? And to have that become a conversation about how do we make this part of it? How do we involve, you know, honestly, people eat with their eyes, they eat with their ears, and they eat with their nose, right?
And I think that's now something from my personal life is making a lot of sense in that. And yes, I will constantly talk about Disney, but like being at the parks and being at some of the restaurants there, although sometimes depending on the restaurant you're at, the quality of the actual food itself might not necessarily always be there, but the experience of eating at a number of these places, the theatricality, the experience of it often makes it extremely worth it, even if some of their drinks, the way that they present them or put them together is amazing, while the drink itself might be a bit too sugary. At the same point, you're kind of like when I did Victoria and Albert's, their whole dinner thing is it's so extremely limited and exclusive that when we did like the chef's table, I mean, this for a dinner for, we were paying close to, I was paying close to almost $2,000 for the entire dinner because it was already like $250 a person. But that dinner went on as long as you wanted it to.
Right.
We had all the attention we wanted. We had 10 courses. It was just like, it was the experience of it was something that we knew we would never be able to recreate. And then when my brother and wife were able to do it the next year, you know, there was no qualm about, I'm just like, I'm prepaying, just let me know what it is and send me the receipt, because knowing that it was, that they were just going to feel amazingly special and taken care of and have the time of their life, that it's like, yes. And sometimes the food is amazing. Sometimes you're like, oh, they could have done better, but the experience of it, because it's within a place that's all about the experience to begin with, that's where the meaning comes from.
Yeah.
So.
And that's where I go with what it's about. And that's what makes me worried and upset. And, you know, I'm going to constantly be in that idea. And then how do you change things, right? It's one thing to complain about stuff, but how do you change things? And so where I would be going is you just keep doing what you're doing, but also, go speak at other places. Go about that, and don't apologize for the ideas, that the ideas at the end of the day are going to win out, right? Mm-hmm. The ideas of what's, you're creating something other, right? Because culture doesn't change overnight. Culture changes drip by drip by drip, right? Obviously Seth Godin line, but it's the truth, right? Which is that you've got to keep going in what you're going. And in the meantime, you guys are also at the forefront of it, right?
Yeah.
Here it is. And in no way am I kind of concerned that, by the way, you're going to crack five figures next year, right? $100 for a fee. I mean, there are certainly people that get design fees. Obviously, CC does it and all and what it is, but she's not the art craftsperson artist, and she's not running that business. And she has a different mindset of what she's trying to do. But here comes you. How many like designers of paper are getting, you know, five-figure design fees, right? And getting that work over and over again, and how you do that. And here comes you, Brian. This is not the last $20,000 event you're going to have, right? So how do you keep going with the energy that yes, of course, that's at the luxury level, but the thing with couture and ready to wear is that they always are influenced by each other. And what was couture 2 years ago is absolutely ready to wear this year, right? So what do we take from it, and how do we go at it? And the idea of it is how do we push the edge and try to make clients uncomfortable? And that to me is what the permission you have, and the permission to have, you know, somebody to do that. I was just talking about, you know, literally it's funny, like this, I did this talk yesterday. I do it all the time for a business at home. And this one client, he actually is a client, but he was on the webinar and said, I can't get my clients to commit to give me all the money up front. It just seems like too big of a commitment to me. And of course I like lost my shit. And I'm like, are you kidding me? that is so unfair to everybody and is basically a relic of a time gone by. You used to be able to have money as the ultimate wedge to ensure quality delivery because the megaphone of somebody talking, which I've said before, is quite limited, right? In the sense of like, what are they going to do? Like if you know, Brian played a dog of a show or Weinger delivered a crap ass invitation, like who are they going to tell, right? Who are they going to talk to? How is it going to be known? And the reality is that before this happened, like in the internet, I mean, is like they couldn't tell anybody, right? Not anybody that's going to know, right? And by the time, you know, you had already gotten booked five times and we're on to the next, by the time they found out. But fast forward to today, everyone's going to know instantly, right? There's no chance that somebody with an agenda is not going to have a bigger megaphone than you ever will, right? And you'll have to spend your time, as you said, with the business you're talking about, Weingard, undoing negativity, right? Faster than not, because everybody's got a megaphone, which means why would I not get all the money up front? Because if you're going to judge me no matter what, I better have the best chance of success. So if I don't have all the money because you didn't pay me or because I got to come out of pocket and I'm resentful to you, I don't really have, you know, the ultimate chance of success. I've taken a risk. And so now I have to take a bigger risk to take a bigger risk, which is insane, which is exactly what I said. Like, and they heard it. So like, I think, you know, if you're going to not allow clients because you don't think they'll make that big a commitment, I mean, what, so I said literally like, what the fuck did they sign up for in the first place? Like if they knew they were going to have to spend $1 million and now all of a sudden they're afraid to spend $1 million in at one time, why did they actually engage you to do what they're going to do? Right. Then they should have decided, I don't need to do this. Because, and that's ultimately the creative part force of business, which is nobody needs what you do. Nobody, they want you, right? So the idea of sticking in that is to me, like that's what's out there too. And then you have like, honestly, the different revenue stream one that you pointed out, which I'll read. I want to read it out loud because it's so like, you, that might make you happy. It's so completely pissed me off. And obviously you've seen it. Weingard, you may not have seen it, but clearly Brian, you have, because you're on the list. But this breakout session, diversifying revenue streams, who's doing
this? Are you going to this, Sean?
No, fuck no.
Oh, I was just curious. No, I was going to say, because you said it was the same old, and I'm like, I think it's actually worse, to be honest with you.
I'm not going.
I was looking at these breakouts. I looked at these breakouts, and I was like, you know, I know they had the whole, like, you know, racial thing that they were trying to make do, but, like, it's all stuff. I had a hard time, like, which ones do I pick as fifth? Because all of it was stuff I didn't even want to listen to. Like, I was trying to figure out how to rate them worse. There's weren't anything I'm interested in.
Yeah. No, I did the same thing. There were, like, two or three of them where I just said, I'm like, I'm putting this as last.
Yeah.
I'm like, I hope it's not, some of them weren't sold out because I was like, gosh, if I get my third or fourth, I'm screwed.
Yeah. Right. Part of me wondered whether, because I know that the actual list of people who were speaking was determined quite like maybe almost a year ago. And while it's shifted a little bit, it becomes the question of, are there some of these subjects that are just kind of out of date? But
that's what I felt like for sure. Right.
But I also, but part of me is also saying, yeah, but that could be, that might count for a few speakers, but still, yeah, it's just, it's all, I feel like fluff and toxic positivity. And there was that one about, Rachel and I were laughing at this. It was the two psychotherapists. It was as if, I don't even want to go into it because it just all sounded like woo, about getting rid of negative business experiences and high achieving professionals and elite and yada, yada, yada. So,
yeah. I remember.
Well, and that was the part where it was.
So these breakout sessions are an hour. 45 minutes. So for 45 minutes,
something like that.
Yeah. So for 45 minutes, and it's any fucking Lee, whatever, right? Many of us learned the hard way in 2020 that we cannot rely on one source of income alone. Here are my tips on how to take your existing services and branch out, as well as repackage them to diversify and strengthen your revenue streams. Top takeaways: readapt and be marketable to clients outside of the wedding industry. Okay. Unpack your packages to make your services agile to caterer. market, right? Diversified income is the key to a healthy, more resilient company that can stand against ebbs and flows in the wedding market. Oh my fucking God. like, is all I have to say. Like, are you kidding me? I have to hear that you're, so what you're telling me, which is exactly what Myram said, which is I was really happy and proud that you said it, because I'll let you say it. What'd you say, Myram?
Oh, well, it was that idea of, oh God, I can't remember, but it was, it centered around the idea that, oh, well, I can't get paid what I'm worth or right. what I need to be paid for what I'm doing. So let me find these other either passive streams of income or other things to make up for that. When it's like, well, why aren't you just charging what you need to in the first place?
Right.
And yeah.
And also not only charging what you should be charging in the first place, but charging it in a way that sustains your business, i.e. deposits being higher and things like that to be able to make it right. through. So you never have to worry about it. It's
right. Yeah. So fuck it. But, you can't make money doing what you're doing. So you got to do something else too. Also.
And right. the other thing that got me was that, like, the breakouts were always something that, like, because the stage stuff is usually kind of flop a little bit. Right. You know, they're just trying to be as broad. And so this is the area that we would actually get something from.
Right.
And I'm like, if this is where
the deep dives, but all of these are on the shallow end of the pool. I mean,
I know. I was like, oh my God, how shallow is the stage going to be if this is the breakouts? I was like, right. oh my God.
Yeah. So I was like, whoa. That's why I reacted so poorly to it. That's why I was like, no. Yeah. And that's what makes me so sad, is because, like, this is really supposed to be like where you're going to introduce really important, if not controversial, things, right? This is where, you know, honestly, I love the breakout room because I was, and a lot of people did. They took the opportunity to, you know, to kind of poke holes at a lot of things.
Right.
And they used to do that a lot. And I was actually really happy because they've had breakout sessions for a long time. And I was really happy with a lot of things that they did because they used to, like, put out, like, controversial shit. Like, I was, you know, I was talking about whatever I was talking about, but Valerie was talking about her percentage model. Andrew was talking about fees. You know, lots of people were like, okay, this is just, even though you don't have as big a crowd, even though it's there, it's like, these are people who really care and want to dig in to, like, oh, okay, let's get at it. And that's what makes me so frustrated, is because these are all fluff, right? There's nothing good here. Right.
Right. And according to Catherine, because I always sign up to be an ambassador for the first timers, that she said, it's actually one of the smallest first timer groups in a long time. That'll, I guess, a lot of repeat people just want to go to the breakers.
Yeah.
So it's not even necessarily a crew of a lot of, you know, people who haven't been before.
Yeah. Well, that's a canary in the coal mine for them.
Yep.
So because they rely on that. And they rely on, you know, new business, new blood, new people going. So I don't know. Those stats are always something to pay attention to.
Right. But that might be a breakers thing, because everyone's like, it's the breakers, but.
Right.
Yeah.
You know. I don't know. I'm not here to indict Engage. I'm here to indict the mentality of the industry. I'm here to indict the mentality of, like, what, you know, people spewing bullshit are about there, the, you know, which I think is amazing. I don't know. Are you blocked too? By the way, I'm totally blocked from all things Voldemort. So,
but I mean, Engage does have some responsibility here. I mean, if they're going to be the thought leader, I don't think it's wrong of you not to indict them. They should be leading us a little bit, you know, in a better way than this. I mean, this was like, I was like, am I at Wedding MBA?
Yeah.
This is what this looked like. I was like, this is unbelievable. I just was shocked that these were the topics, but
yeah. Whatever. Well, yeah, and who they're having, you know, who their main stage speakers are, right? So,
I'll find out soon, because I'm supposed to be, like, programming all that here shortly. So I'm curious.
Well, you have the normal people, right? So here you have Cindy, well, you know, I can, you can do it by extension, right? Who is not kind of on the stage, if you got it, yeah. Right? So meaning
who's right.
the breakout. So you have Mindy. You have Marcy, you have Brian,
Cindy,
you have, let's see. Yeah. You have Michael Makowitz, you have Cindy, you have Simon, you have Duncan, right? So all the same bullshit, right? So, yeah, like I'm looking at who the speakers are now. So, like, and again, I don't know what they have kind of, and I don't know who the fuck is Ryan Hill. I don't know. Anyway, But they are here, and I don't quite, like, I appreciate and love what a lot of things that have come out of folks' mouth, but, like, there's nobody that's going to make me think of things, right? And here it is, you know, I appreciate Cindy, Duncan, and Simon a lot. I mean, I think they're always fascinating people, but like, okay, what are they going to do? What investment do they have to change the industry? And that's the thing that I want to know. Like, what investment do they have to be better? Really? What investment does Mindy have to, does Marcy have? Because they're going to get their business. And let's get very real. In 10 or 15 years, they're out of business. They're not in the business anymore. You know, how much do you really want to have, you know, an 80-year-old Marcy doing your wedding or an 80-year-old Mindy doing your wedding, right? The answer is you don't, right? So they are in every way not invested the way that most people in the business that are shaping the business to come forward are, right? And yet, where are those voices? What are they talking about? And why are they talking about them? And what are we shaping for them? And how can they be influenced on what was in the past and what is the future? And how do we take what we learned from COVID and move them forward? You have to have people that are invested in that. You know, look, Brian, for whatever reason, you're here and you are, but you're going to be in this business for the next 15, 20 years, right?
Right.
And and you're going to be a paragon going forward. So why aren't you talking about what this is? You know, as much so, my point is, how invested are Cindy, Simon, and Duncan going to be in it if they get paid to speak, right? They're going to have speaking, and Michael Michaelowicz, they're going to do what they are. They're not invested in the wedding business and upending how it's operating. What investment do they have, right? So I indict and engage, because if this is really meant to move the industry forward and create a conference for luxury wedding professionals that are meant to redefine the way luxury weddings are perceived in the marketplace and opportunities to expand and diversify the market, right? They have lost their mission, right? So this is their opportunity, quite frankly, to get it back. Remember when they cut off the whole race conversation and see how we respond? What, so you're putting up a bunch of black faces and having them talk about it a little bit about what diversity is? It's like, okay, that doesn't actually help, right? That actually isn't valuable here, right? Because you're not doing the very thing that's going to upend the industry. You're just not. So I always rail against that. And I think that that's what makes it like, you know, like, who's paying attention to Dick Fosgray? The ground has absolutely shifted underneath your feet. And now you're telling me, let's do a better scissor kick, right? Like, what the fuck? Like, really, really, truly, what the fuck? Like, and here comes, like, the shit we were just bullshitting about today is going to change the industry. It's going to upend things. Like, Brian, I can absolutely see you saying, and here's the immersive experience you're going to receive. And so while you're paying me, because you've already proven to yourself that you can get 70% of your money up front, you've already proven it, right? So that part of the equation is already done, right? Now, all you're saying is, can I make the number bigger? Well, if I can make the number bigger because I can create more enjoyment before I ever step on stage, right? And I can get them more excited for me, then I've just justified a bigger number where I get 70% of it. Right. So you have created something where, why not? Why the fuck not? Right. That I would show you this because I can afford it and I want to. And if I show it and prove it and you love it so much, then I will, that will be a thing. And the difference between where we were and where we are is if you create something that's freaking magical about coming up and you do something, whatever, digital, and you can kind of like, you can always sample that shit and put it out in your social. Right. Well, what's stopping you from sampling and putting it out on social is, oh my God, I want that too. Right.
Right.
There's nothing stopping you. Nothing stopping you from doing any of that. Right. And here you go. So it's bigger than just you're getting more money and you're getting more money up front. It's bigger. It's 100%. Way fucking bigger than that. It's that I can do things that you can't do. Right. Because I've changed the way people perceive me. And so now I'm going to do things that are going to be like light years ahead. And by the time you catch up to me, I will already be five steps ahead. Right.
Right.
So, and I will be continually to push that, continually, you know, riding the wave of what, when you catch up to me, I will already be doing something different and getting paid more money, right, to be doing this stuff. Because I have, and me, a wedding DJ playing at the, you know, at the accessible luxury set, you're not 50 grand, right?
Right.
You're not the Valerie or the Joshes or anyone else like that who's getting 50, 60, 70 grand to play, right?
Right.
So you're not doing that, right? And whether they're still getting that, I have no earthly idea, right? But the point of that is like, you're never going to compete in that space, but you're going to be able to upend things and do things that are ridiculous. And the same thing goes with wine group, which is exactly why I said to you, 224, right? And you, Myram, of course, your work is going to get more and more and more valuable and expensive. And and because it's going to be intrinsic to the experience, it's going to become, it's going to become seamless to it, right? The expectation is going to become seamless to how are we going to express ourselves and have a knowledge base, which isn't perfect. I agree with you 1,000%. It is not going to be a perfect literal thing. Like I'm showing you in digital, what's going to become actual. Some designers will do that. They will. But I think that the very best of them are going to be able to set the foundation and expectations that allow for artistry on site, right? That I totally agree with you. And I think, but I think that the expectation and understanding of what that stage is for you to jump off of is going to be so much higher. And it's going to be indispensable to the experience. It's going to become expected, right? Of just like when you go to a restaurant, just like when you have, it's going to become expected that the experience is the investment, right? And while, as you say, sometimes the food is fantastic, sometimes not, but the experience of what it's going to become is going to allow for the ultimate expression of art that it's not certain, right? So yeah, I think that, and that part about it is like, what's interesting to me, Brian, as you go down there, because I think you'll, and you, Myram too, is you're gonna see people who just don't get it, literally don't get it and don't see, like they think that, hey, how are you doing that, Brian? Well, I don't understand. You're like, that's not fair. That's like not way. Why are you getting your money that way, right? And not that you're gonna have those conversations, but you're gonna hear people doing it the other way. Well, you gotta bill by the hour. Your package's gotta be, like, no, not at all, right? So as you start to see that, you're gonna see like, oh, wait a second. You guys are uninvested in trying to figure out how to take these opportunities. And so that's a very lonely experience. And so you have to search out those that are willing to kind of look to be something other, because it will be lonely till it's not. I mean, and look, I hate NFTs. I think they're stupid because of the way that they've been created. But to think that NFTs are not going to be part of the wedding business, it's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why wouldn't it be, right?
Right.
I
mean, their valuation it can be absurd, but their meaning can remain. I guess.
Yeah. It can, and you can create false scarcity, and that is what I think.
But I'm just saying, besides a monetary value, that idea of saying here is something that is exclusive to the, I guess you could say exclusivity independent of cost.
Right.
It's
something that you can own and you can have and you can know that it's yours and you can have that certainty of ownership, I think is a possibility in the wedding space, right? Why not? Why not for yourself? You're buying into that and that's part of it, right? And you know, that essence of things, I think, is also in the air. So I'm just always of the mind that, you know what? Come on. Really, really, truly come on. And I want very much for, you know, us to do better. And I think, like, you know, look, everyone is going to, the one thing is true is that this is also a rising tide. Everybody's going to go along. Everybody's going to be arrogant as fuck, right? And say, I've figured it out. I'm super busy. Go fuck yourself, Sean. You know, I'm going to go listen to Voldemort because I'm making so much money now and you're an idiot, right? Okay.
Good luck with that.
Good luck with that. Good luck with that. Talk to me in a year. Talk to me in a year when, you know, the Bryans of the world are, not only are they involved in, you know, in music, but they're involved in the production of things and they're bringing in as creative consultants, even if they start a whole creative consultancy, even if they're not the DJ, right? They're like, for, you know, $1,000, $1,500, we'll come in with a creative package for you that's gonna blow your face off. And then pretty much you can just have your $500 DJ do it and it'll be a remarkably better experience. And so you're gonna pay $2,000 for a DJ, or you can pay us $1,500 and get basically any really good, decent freelancer to come in and execute for us. And it'll be so much better for you. And I'm gonna figure out how to do that at a digital scale. I'm gonna run a team of basically 15, 20 people doing it, and I'll make $5 million doing it, right? Just basically giving you my ideas, right? Why? Because I've become an idea generator, and I touch every fucking thing related to music, from what it feels like, what it sounds like, what, you know, it looks like, how you experience it, when you experience it, and what we create for you is duplicatable, right? And no, you may not have the $20,000 to hire me, but you certainly can get a flavor of the experience and invest $2,000-$3,000 in a crazy good DJ experience that is beyond anything you could imagine. And I promise you, no one in your local market can do anything close to what we're going to come up with for you. And the expense of executing all that, well, that's a part of the beauty of digital, right? Is digital tools and the possibilities of executing that, and is the cost of production is minimal, right?
Yep.
We'll show you how to do it with your LiDAR iPhone, right? We'll be able to load in and do all these things, but because at the end of the day, that's just a tool. But we're able to wield tools and do tools because we do them every single day. And here comes Brian, you know, DJ, who 5 years ago was playing 200-300 gigs, getting his money, feeling good, and decided to make a pivot to say, fuck that, I'm an artist, right? And I'm going to upend the way that people perceive weddings and know that the culture of entertainment can change, right? And the experience that I can manifest for them can change because technology let me, right? And here it is. I now have a multi, if not $100 million business, because I comment on literally, why wouldn't I pay? Why wouldn't 1,000 people pay you $1,000, right? No, sorry. 10,000 people pay you $1,000. That's $100 million, right? Yeah. Why not? It's a website, AI, and you run a big service business and have that go along. And yeah, why not? 10,000 weddings out of 1 million, right? In the United States alone. And you're creating these better and more remarkable experiences that are totally branded to you, totally, totally owned and known, and they're not formulaic at all. And effectively what you're saying is that I can bring in any kind of talent to execute this, right? Yeah, that's where this fucking goes. And that's what's supposed to happen at Engage. And that's what doesn't happen at Engage, right? And that makes me sad actually for both of you, right? Because somebody's like saying, oh shit, we could do this together. We could figure out how to do this. I know how to do that. I know how to market this shit. This is great, right? I'm here, right? That's a really good idea, but I think we should do it this way, right? That's what's supposed to happen at Engage.
Well, to me, it's more the individual conversations where there's the freedom for that exploration to occur. Yeah. Not during the sessions.
No, I mean, but the sessions are supposed to spark that thought. The sessions are supposed to be those things of getting the juices going, that we don't have to do it this way. Right. You don't have to be doing things the way you do things.
Right.
In
spite of the sessions.
Right. So now what you're hoping for is that in spite of the sessions, you're going to have super creative people come in, try to figure out how to upend the way the business runs when everything about the sessions are telling you just do what you do better. Right. So that's the part that to me is such an indictment. And what we miss out on is truly, you know, someone starting a $100 million business. I mean, quite honestly, the reason that Solemnly Pretty got to be worth $25 million has a whole fucking lot to do with Engage. Truly. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were early and often to Engage. Remember, she was a freaking stationer, right? What the hell does she know about weddings? I mean, she was not like steeped in the overallness of weddings and learning the ins and outs and understanding things and making sure that the photography was what it was, learning how to
receive. I see you over here. I see your shit talk.
So anyway, that to me was, so yeah. So Style Me Pretty $25 million later, right? They would be nothing without all the things that they got from Engage and all the inspiration and putting them on the stage to have it go what they're doing. And the amount of information, then Tate would be the first person to tell you the amount of information he was able to absorb and then program into the business of Style Me Pretty, and to provide that platform, that of course was what made them what they were, right? And same thing with, you know, honestly, travel businesses, right? I mean, they owe a whole bunch to Engage, you know, a lot of, you know, there's many businesses that got started because of what Engage did. And so what I'm trying to say is that Engage, when it was on its mission, really did upend the industry, really did change the way people perceive things. And we do things today because of what they created. And now it's time for them to evolve again, and they've just given up the ghost, which means that I turn back to you and say, hey, whoever you find in an avenue of expression, whether it's you guys doing podcasts, you know, as I know you all do, as it's talking and going and talking over and over and over again about what is creative and could be, because you are absolutely obsessed with the idea that the world is not the same, right? Which I think we all agree. And do something with it. That to me is what I rail against, right? And I hope that, you know, we won't talk about this more, but like, it just so pissed me off when I saw that. And I'm glad, Brian, that you actually agree that it was even worse than I was saying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. And then of course, my fun fact is like, she got her ass kicked again. She got a cease and desist letter. I will end in for 3 minutes, but so what's her face got a cease and desist letter because she started marketing her upcoming business that's going to launch in August 2022 when it's over, which is in direct violation of the order. So just so you know what's happening, there's a preliminary injunction from her doing anything related to the wedding business. Like, she literally can't do anything. And if she's, what she's doing is saying, I'm going to launch my new wedding brand in August, that's actually in direct contravention to the agreement and the injunction that she has. And so what that will ultimately mean is that she can get sanctioned. And if the court gets pissed off enough, they can make that injunction permanent and they can overrule the contract. And they can make that injunction permanent because she's unwilling to agree to, she's basically in breach again of her contract. And the court can step in as a matter of equity to say that she's creating such damage so that they may not do it permanently, but what she's risking by doing what she's doing, which is making me giggle and giggle and giggle, is like, so now it's August 22, basically a year, which is what the contract says, it's 3 years for her to do that. But if she's basically thumbing her nose at that and the court agrees that she's thumbing her nose at it, they can simply extend, right? Okay. They can
so
tell
just,
her.
So just to be clear, is that it's saying that she can't do, like, she can't have like this new business until that point, but she's saying, oh yeah, I won't have that business, but I'm going to talk about it. Is
yeah.
That, okay, got it. Which, although I would say, yes, your first thought is like, well, she hasn't created the business yet, but she's promoting it, which
yeah
is pretty much the same, almost
yeah.
Not quite the same thing, but it's such a, yeah.
It is the exact same thing. It's like saying, hey, the only thing I don't have is a product to show you. Wait, you just wait, August 1st, it's coming. It's yeah. coming, I promise
you're
you.
Advertising.
Coming August 1st, when I'm around for you to do that.
Yeah.
And so you cannot say that. You have to say nothing. You don't own, that's what non-compete is. Non-compete is you're done. You need to go sit on, like, you're in the penalty box and you can't say shit until you're out of the penalty box, yeah. Right? When you start to say, you know, hey, I'm about to get out. I'm gonna come and kick your ass when I get out. Like, you're not allowed to do that because that's another penalty. The whole point of that is that's another penalty. You get penalized for taunting. In sports, you would get penalized for taunting, right? It's like getting kicked out of the game and then coming back and, you know, saying in the apron and screaming, motherfucker, motherfucker, right? Of course, you're going to get fined because you're doing something again, right? So that's what the court has the ability. I just want to make sure that it's kind of plain as day. And so that's what her lawyer said, is like, cease and desist and stop. And now we're going to apply to the court for you because you keep on doing it. And because you literally made this cease and desist letter public, she's going to lose, right? And so what stares down the road, and I can tell you, dollars to donuts, they may sanction her with money, but more likely than not, what they're going to do is they're going to extend, which is what they asked for, but they're going to extend the non-compete. And so here she is thinking that she's going to start basically a year from now, year 13 months from now. And I'm telling you, they'll probably extend it another 2 years.
Yeah. Right? It seems like a more apt punishment and consequence for violating it rather than like, here, you know, pay money, which you can afford, when it's like, no, let's actually shut down two more years of you being able to make money.
Right. And by the way, it's kind of like, and say another word and then you'll get more penalty. It's like, and keep talking. You say it again, you publish it again, you do this again, we're going to keep punishing you because the court controls, right? And so she's, and what they have is a preliminary injunction. And now they're at this place of a permanent injunction, which will stop her from, you know, doing that stuff. And she's facing down that barrel, right? So the worst that could happen to her is that the court rules and like, look, you routinely and disobey your contract. And now we're going to step in as the court. And so what she's facing is being permanently banned from the wedding industry. So the first move would be we extended 2 years. Then she says, oh, they're so bad. They're so awful. They're so terrible. Then the court says, you're an asshole. You're done, right? We're out, right? You've made it plain as day and clear that you're not going to respect your non-compete. And so therefore, we're going to take the draconian measure of banning you for 10 years, right? We may not ban you for life, but we'll ban you from 10 years. And if you say anything regarding the wedding industry whatsoever in those 10 years, you'll be banned for life, right?
Yeah.
So she deserves every fucking thing she gets, right? In terms of this thing, because again, it's getting played out that the reality of the world is you don't get to play the damsel in distress when you sign your name to a contract. Yeah. So yeah. I don't, and what always pisses me off are the comments, right? That's what always pisses me off. And there are names on there that I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? So, c'est la vie. It's not a man and women thing. It's a kind of a business thing. And I think that the business has to be business, and it's in keeping with what we're talking about. So, yeah. Hate me for it or not, I think she's an asshole and she deserves everything she gets. So, but on a positive note, I do think that it's just a crazy opportunity for you guys to change everything, right? So, and obviously super busy. So I'm excited. One thing I'll say it a lot. I'm taking off the first week of August, right? So that week we're not gonna meet.
Okay, well, let's just make sure that, so you're talking, so August the 5th.
August the 5th.
Got it, okay.
Right.
Cool.
Have a great week, guys. See ya. Great combo. Thank you.